your worst photo?
Well, I don't know, but I'm sure if you look at the New York Times, you'll find one.
So we're now going to go back to more serious stuff. Let's go back to the audience.
Hi, my name is Lynn O'Connell. I'm from Alexandria, Virginia. And my question is for Mr. Nader. It's very, very important to me that my vote count in this election, and I'd like to know what kind of plan you have for getting to 270 electoral votes.
Well, first of all, we're going to get on more than enough ballots to get that number of electoral votes. The second, we know that the system is rigged by the two parties, from ballot access to ballot harassment to exclusion from the debates, to give us a fair chance. So we're frankly a underdog campaign representing millions of underdogs in this country, people who are pushed around, harmed, ignored, laid off without any reasons, arbitrarily defrauded, you know, all the things the mainstream press reports about, but then they don't conclude that there needs to be a real change here. So we're going to go all out. People want to vote for their conscience, fine. If they want to vote for us in the slam dunk states that are dominated by Republicans like Texas or Democrats like New York, that's fine. But just remember, after this election is over, that the Nader-Kamejo ticket put forth an agenda of immense humanity and practical implementation that was long overdue and long ignored by both parties, and that we gave you the chance to vote your conscience. And if you don't vote your conscience, I'd like to hear from you about what part of your body you are voting.
Now, if a month before the election it becomes clear that it's mathematically impossible for you to win the presidency because you're not on enough state ballots, do you stay on or do you withdraw?
Well, you remember that headline in Daily News, Dewey wins? Because the polls said he wins. The polls can be wrong. The polls are wrong about Howard Dean. They all said he was going to win in a landslide against his Democratic primary opponents. We're building beyond November. An oak tree always starts with an acorn. And we are determined to give this younger generation of Americans a horizon for a better country and a better world, and show them how to do it. Because the older generations have conceded two-party monopolies and narrow choices and low expectations and least worth mentality far too long. American people deserve better. They deserve independent-minded, reform-minded, and diligently-minded voters, just the way they are as sports fans.
Let's take another question from our audience here on Justice Talking.
Hi, I'm Jeff Forgione from Washington, D.C. Quick question for each. Governor Dean, what's your position on groups pulling out all the stops to keep Mr. Nader off the ballots? And Mr. Nader, would you consider stepping back off the ballot in some of the key states that were close in terms of 2000, like New Hampshire, like West Virginia? Couldn't you still make your point and reach a certain goal in terms of vote getting without getting into those critical areas that are going to be the difference, Arkansas, Missouri, those type of places?
Let me start with Governor Dean.
Okay. I do not think that there ought to be people like David Jones going out and trying to get Ralph Nader off the ballot. I do, however, think that Ralph is playing a victim when he ought not to be, because he is using techniques that get other candidates in trouble to get on the ballot. If you pay people to get your signatures and they get them from Republicans, you are bound to have trouble. Democrats do that to each other to get each other off the ballot. So I do not think this is a conspiracy to keep Ralph Nader off the ballot. I think if Ralph was using the means that he ought to be using, which is tons of volunteer signatures and not getting in bed with anti-gay groups like Oregon Family Policy, then we wouldn't be having these kinds of problems.
See why I go after the Democrats, well, as Republicans? They face falsehoods and they keep repeating them again and again and again. The way the system is orchestrated, sometimes you have to have paid signature firms to get you on the ballot. Why? Because the two parties are working overtime to keep you off the ballot. The other thing is this. As far as the question directed to me is concerned, I'm never going to betray, and I'm sure Peter Kamejo is never going to betray our supporters, and before the election say, sorry, in few states, we're cutting out. That's not the way to build a progressive political movement, and Rome wasn't built in a day. We got to look beyond November, too. Secondly, people should think Electoral College, as long as we're saddled with it. And if you're in Texas, you can easily vote your conscience and vote for the Nader-Kamejo ticket, because the Democrats are abandoning Texas at the presidential level and, of course, hurting their slate of candidates all the way down to city council. And the Republicans do the same thing in places like Minnesota. We have to get over this idea that only small parties take away votes. That it's big parties that take away votes. And as long as the Democrats are not concerned that in 2000, 10 times more Democrats deserted Gore, 8 million Democrats deserted Gore and voted for Bush, 10 times more than deserted and voted for the Nader-LaDuke ticket. It is baffling that the Democrats will not focus on 10 times more votes that they can get back and whine and carp about a third-party candidacy, and they can, in the process, start registering 9 million African-American voters, which Jesse Jackson thinks the Democratic Party is ignoring.
Governor Dean, when you were running in the primaries, you often sounded like Ralph Nader. You talked about the domination of corporate interests. You opposed the war in Iraq. How do your politics differ from Mr. Nader?
I'm sure there are some. My purpose to coming here was not to differentiate my politics from Ralph. He may choose to do so more vigorously. But here's the decision. Here's the fundamental decision that we made differently. I believe that in the end, the people that I care about are served better with a John Kerry presidency than they are with a George Bush presidency. The whole reason I ran, it partly was about corporate interests, but most of it was about human beings. One of the biggest shocks I got was when I got to Iowa, coming from an eastern state, and found out that working people in this country didn't trust American corporations because they weren't American anymore, that they would sell their jobs and move them to Mexico or China, India, and forget about people who worked there for 20 years. If George Bush is reelected, that's going to get worse. John Kerry already has a program in place to stop that. He's even been in trouble with the business community because he called corporations that do that Benedict Arnolds. I believe that there is a big difference between John Kerry. I know Ralph has said some things that John Kerry hasn't said, and I agree with Ralph on some of them. But we cannot let the perfect become the enemy of the good. The stakes are too high, and it's human beings. This isn't a debate about who has the right to be on the ballot and philosophy and let's get lots of different points of view. This is a debate about human beings and whether they have health insurance or not, whether they have jobs or not, and whether we're going to stand up for public education in this country or not. And there's a big difference between John Kerry and George Bush, and I cheerfully support John Kerry because I think he can do the right thing.
Okay, here is a clip from Democratic presidential candidate Senator John Kerry.
I think my candidacy will speak to and appeal to many of the people who were attracted in the year 2000 to Ralph Nader. I've known him for a long time. We've worked together on many issues.
Mr. Nader, what do you see as the prime differences between you and Senator Kerry?
Well, there are a lot of them. I can just give you a quick list. I mean what I say about getting rid of corporate subsidies, handouts, giveaways. I think we should have a national crackdown on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse that's drained and looted trillions of dollars in the last 5 years from innocent workers, pension holders, and small investors. I do believe in the electoral reform that John Anderson talked about. I haven't heard John Kerry say anything about proportional representation or instant runoff voting. I believe in full public financing of public elections, not putting them on the auction block to the highest bidders, who you know come from the wealthy elite and the corporate commercial givers. I believe that people should have a right to benefit from repeal of the Taft-Hartley Act, so Walmart workers and others can form unions and improve their life and collectively bargain against these corporations whose executives make millions on the backs of people who are making $6-7 an hour, single moms and others. I also believe that there should be no draft in this country, and I'd like to see John Kerry and George W. Bush come out against it. I also believe we should get out of this war in Iraq, as 42% of the American people want the troops back now. Over 55 think it was a mistake to send it in the first place.
Okay,
I believe in national charters of
okay,
global corporations.
Okay, I didn't ask for every difference,
all right.
But okay.
All right. I'm just trying to make sure that I make my point abundantly clear.
I think you have, and we're going to go on to another question from our audience here on Justice Talking.
My name is Jennifer Ellingston. I'm from the Green Party. Mr. Nader has been the only one who has mentioned the defense budget over and over and over, and the profiteering, and how it's half of everything and straining everything. Our president depends on fear over and over and over. We're told that we are in danger, and of course, we're all meant to be terrified. And the Spinist Democrats have never said, well, you're overdoing it a little bit. So what I'm asking is, this is hypothetical, but if you were in power, cut in half the defense budget? Would you go back to the ABM treaty? Would you rescind repeal of the Patriot Act? Would you rescind the FISA Act? Would you close down the CIA? Would you get back to real government? Thank you.
Now, I'm assuming that Ralph Nader would say yes to most of this, so I'm going to turn this over to Governor Dean.
I think it's only fair to let Ralph just have his own word for a sec. I mean, would you say yes to all of that?
No, we do need an intelligence capability in this country, but not $40 billion of mistakes every year. I mean, this is the most bloated budget that has led our country astray and wrong from the time of the Soviet Union to the Iraq War.
I think there are two big problems with the defense budget. One is that there is the contracts that get let out, like the Halliburton contract, of course, is the most famous, let out by a vice president of the United States who is actually getting money from Halliburton in deferred compensation. That's a violation of the federal ethics code, even though it may theoretically not be against the law. And the other is that the problem with the defense budget is not entirely its size, it's what it's spent on. For example, yes, we should go back into the ABM treaty. I believe we ought to sign the landmines treaty. There's no reason to do that now that the DMZ is not such a problem as it was between the Koreas. Landmines are a weapon which principally serves to blow the heads and hands off small children around the world. I believe that instead of building the tactical battlefield nuclear weapons program, which is a weapons program that does nothing to fight against terrorism, we need to invest in special ops and human intelligence. I believe that instead of investing in Star Wars, which has failed the majority of its tests, that we ought to be doing different kinds of things with that money, such as paying soldiers and making sure there are adequate schools on our military bases. So I'm not sure I subscribe to all the list. I think we need a change in the defense budget, but you're not going to cut the defense budget. What you're going to do is reallocate it so then do things that make sense.
In the last presidential election, only 51% of Americans voted. Among 18 to 25-year-olds, the percentage was much lower. There are many voters who have felt for years that they've been choosing between the lesser of two evils. I want to ask you both how you engage people who feel that none of the candidates represent their interests. Start with you, Governor Dean.
I think you got to speak to people's interests. I mean, I think that's one thing that Ralph does, and I did too. And that's probably why we're both here instead of in the White House. I do think the Democrats have made a mistake, and I'm very frank about this, in ignoring our core constituency groups. There's a political scientist by the name of George Lakoff, who teaches at Berkeley, whose view is that the Republicans have learned this, and we haven't yet, that instead of going to the swing voters, what you do is you energize your base. They've gotten big turnouts, we haven't. I made no bones about that. I still believe that's the way to win elections. So I think we ought to go to the base. I think we ought not to give people the lesser choice between two evils. I believe, however, that if you look at right now George Bush is calling John Kerry the most liberal senator in the United States. Well, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I certainly know that he stood up for the environment. He has stood up for a progressive tax code. He's already talked about getting rid of all the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy. This is a guy who has progressive credentials, and we ought to be supporting him.
Way to energize the people who think their interests are not being represented, Mr. Nader.
Well, there are a lot of small and big ways. Small ways, for example, make the election day a holiday for people who have long commutes. The second is to have same-day voter registration. That's one reason why the vote turnout in Minnesota is higher than in many states. The third is to have proportional representation so people feel that their vote counts even though they don't get 51% of the vote, like the Greens in Germany. The fourth is to have more candidates out there. You know, that's what we're trying to do. All this will be laid out in detail and for public debate on our website, votenator.org. But here's the main one. Here's the one that I really like the most. In addition to having more initiatives on the ballot, because they don't want to vote for the candidates, they come out for a particular initiative that they want enacted into law. It's a big one, in my mind, is binding none of the above. In America, you can only vote yes when you go to the polls. You have no opportunity to vote none of the above or no confidence in all the candidates. So if you have binding none of the above on every ballot line, if you don't like the candidates, and you don't want to write anyone in, and you don't want to write your own name, you can vote binding none of the above. And if that wins, it sends that election packing with the candidates and orders new elections in 30 days.
Governor Dean, is
that
this the year?
That is exactly the difference between the two of us. I think the last two things that Ralph Nader said, I could not disagree with more strongly. We live in a real world. We have to make real choices. Binding none of the above means we don't have to make real choices. That's the first problem. The second problem is I could not disagree with you more about referendum. Referendum is a very attractive thing. People like to go and give their opinions, and most people in America believe in referendum government. I don't. We gave civil rights to a despised minority in 2000. The gay and lesbian community got the same rights as everybody else did. If that had ever been put to referendum, it would have gone down. Can you imagine what would have happened in Arkansas if you tried to do the civil rights movement through ballot referendum? Referendum is not always the best form of government. It is the tyranny of the majority. And I'm surprised to hear Ralph defend it, because Thomas Jefferson was one of the people who stood up and talked about the tyranny of the majority when he wrote the Constitution. That is why this democracy is such a powerful and wonderful force, is because the minority, whatever that minority may be, still has its rights protected, and referendum doesn't do that.
The minority is protected by the Constitution of the state and the federal Constitution. You don't stifle the voice of the people in direct democracy when their legislature and governor turns their back on them by saying no initiative referendum recall. I suppose you're against the recall, too.
Okay, referendum has been used to deny the rights of gay people in 30 states in this country.
Okay, I'm
going to
jump in here because we only have a few more minutes. We only have a few more minutes, and I want to get my favorite question in.
Okay.
It used to be that you couldn't run for office on a major party ticket and be Catholic or divorced. It's still not clear you can be a woman and win the presidency. And you certainly can't be an atheist. There are probably a host of things you can't be or can't say and be considered a viable major party presidential candidate. Isn't this a problem? How can we get our candidates to reflect the diversity of America? Start with you, Governor Dean.
Start with you. That's called look left and fake right, or fight.
I wasn't sure. I was.
I think we proved that you can have a viable candidacy. We did come very close to winning. I think John Kerry ran a great 3-week campaign in Iowa and nosed us out. We all knew whoever won the first primary was going to win the whole thing because of the way the primaries were compressed. I feel pretty good about what we did. We raised $53 million. We have an email list of 700,000 people, and most of the contributions we got were under $100. I remember a woman from Penn State University who sold her bicycle for $100, sent us the money, and said, "I'm selling my bicycle for democracy." This country is alive and well if we'll have candidates who'll stand up and say what they think. And it's my function, I believe, in the Democratic Party, is to get John Kerry elected and then stand up and say what we think. So we're going to do all those things that he's talking about in the campaign trail.
All right, I'm going to give this to Mr. Nader, but I still haven't heard about women and atheists and other things like that.
Well, certainly there are all kinds of taboos. There's a taboo about criticizing the Israeli military regime. There's a taboo about criticizing anything that would be considered anti-religious. There's a taboo in many Democrat and Republican circles of even using the phrase corporate crime until recently. There's a taboo about saying that we need to repeal the Taft-Hartley Act. Even the Democrats, who rely on organized labor to win or lose elections, are turning their back on the workers. There are a lot of taboos, and the way to get over it is to have more voices, more choices, more regional primaries, so Iowa and New Hampshire don't decide the nominee for either party. And I might say with a little bit of immodesty, the fuller answer to your question is in this new book that I've come out called The Good Fight.
Okay, quick response. We have 30 seconds, quick response, Governor Dean.
I think you ought to buy the book. I haven't seen it.
No. Women, atheists.
As long as we're not, we're promoting ourselves, though, democracyforamerica.com. We want you to go to that website.
No one wants to deal with it. Well, there's so much more I want to ask you both, but we're out of time. So thank you so much, former Vermont Governor Howard Dean and independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader. Thank you for joining us on Justice Talking. Also, thanks to our radio listeners, television viewers, and to our audience here at the National Press Club. We invite all of you to continue this discussion on third parties at justicetalking.org. And we should tell you that we always end Justice Talking with a very pithy quote. So here it is, in the words of writer P.J. O'Rourke. In our brief national history, we have shot 4 of our presidents. We have worried 5 of them to death. We've impeached 1 and hounded another out of office. And when all else fails, we hold an election and assassinate their character. He said that in 1991.
I prefer a quote by Gandhi.
I'm Margo Adler. Thanks for listening to Justice Talking.